Now, I just want to start off by saying I grew up in Frederick in Cape Town. I stayed there for the first 14 years of my life with my mother and father, my two sisters, one older and one younger. And I grew up in a very broken family. My father. My father was an alcoholic, and he used to abuse me a lot. And I remember as a little boy growing up, how I used to want to be loved by my dad. And I never got that love. And I used to enjoy jumping into bed with him on a Saturday morning while my mother was in the kitchen. And I used to put my ear on his shoulder and watch him read his book and just want the comfort of my father. And there was a hole that I needed to be filled. And I wanted him just to comfort me, you know, and just to be there for me. But he used to abuse me a lot. He used to take out his anger and his hatred and his drunkenness and take it out on me and give me a lot of hidings and beat me. He used to beat me with a shambok, and he used to beat me with a beach ball bat. And from when I was a small little boy, and this obviously affected me growing up, I became very rebellious. I remember when my dad used to go a bit wild and beat me, and he would hit the lampshade off the light on the ceiling, and the glass would fall down, but he would just carry on. And I remember looking at him in his face and just seeing a hatred, and thinking, man, this is my father who must protect me and love me and care for me and provide me, but he's acting this way. Who can I turn to, you know? And so I became very rebellious. And then I was 6 years old in school. I just started being rebellious against all the authorities that were in my life, against my mother and father, against teachers. They called my mommy when I was 6 years old to come to school. And when she came to the school, I was tied up in a chair from my feet up to my chest, running away from school, being naughty, stealing, fighting. And I was kicked out of that school at the end of grade 2. And I went to my second school. I ended up going to 9 schools, and including 3 boarding schools, and kicked out of every one of them for stealing. I used to love stealing. I used to love breaking into people's houses, even from a small boy. My dad used to come from work and take me to the neighbors to apologize. And I used to get a kick out of this, some fulfillment. I used to enjoy this. And so all the schools I went to, I used to end up fighting, smoking. I started doing drugs when I was 10 years old. I was in my third school, Frederick Primary, and got involved with guys that were a bit older than me. I started smoking weed. When I was 12 years old, I started going on to heavier drugs. I started smoking Mandrax. And by then I was like about 5 schools. I was in my first boarding school in 1983. And there as well, rebellious, fighting, doing drugs, and that type of thing. I went to my first high school. I lost it 1 term in Cape Town High. I was kicked out of there for bunking, for fighting, a stabbing incident, and just rebelling against authorities all the time. All the schools I went to after that, Seapoint Boys High, and then I went to Maitland High, and the last boarding school that I went to, my third boarding school, was in the Northern Cape, in Brunflo. And they said to my dad, they said to him, send your son up here, because we've handled all sorts of punks. Just send him to us. And I remember my father saying that to my mom. And there was like some type of a relief there that I was going to get some help. And before that, I'd already seen a psychologist. And then I went with my whole family to see a team of psychologists. So we sat down as a family, and the psychologist began to ask me all these different questions. And there was a panel behind this one-way glass. And my little sister, myself, still went up and looked through this glass, and we saw all these people. And for me, it was a bit of a joke, but it was a serious thing. And I remember as they were asking, me different questions, and I used to play chess with my dad. And they asked me if I would like to play more chess with my father. And I remember as a little boy, just bursting out crying.
in that place. Because I wanted that intimacy with my dad, and I wasn't getting it, and I would, you know, do anything for it. And I just remember crying and looking back and just wanting the love of my father, you know, just to hold me, just to tell me, hey, Dex, everything's going to be okay. But anyway, I went to that boarding school where they said they can handle any punk. I went there, and 2 months later, they phoned my dad and said, we're going to send your son back on the next bus to Cape Town. We can't handle him. So I was fighting in this close, rebellious. I was full of hatred. I didn't like myself very much. And I would take out my frustration and my hatred on other people and end up fighting with a lot of guys. Just being abusive, you know. They say hurting people hurt, and I was hurting. And yeah, so I left school when I was 15. I didn't finish standard 6, grade 8. And so, you know, I had a standard 5. And I started working with a standard 5 education. I was pushed through standard 6 and I didn't finish standard 7. So I had a standard 5 education. And I started working. My very first job, I was 15 years old. I worked as an installer, installing intercoms in schools. And what I used to do on the weekends was I used to take the car, one of the company cars, after everybody had left to go home, I would take one of the company cars and take it out for the weekend and then bring it back on the Sunday. So I'd have my own company car at 15 years old. So, and this is, for me, it wasn't a big deal. For me, this was fun. And I used to enjoy it. I used to enjoy this type of sin. It was really, you know, something I really loved. And I took the car back one Sunday, and the boss was there with the young secretary. And I knew I had to go just own up. And even though I was a thief, I had a bit of honesty to me. And I went and knocked on the door, and I said to him, Mr. De Villiers, how are you doing? He says, hey, Dex, good to see you. What are you doing here? So I said, no, I've just come to return your car. So he says to me, why did you take my car? And I remember saying to him, because I wanted to have some fun. And he shut the door in my face and said, bye, Declan. And that was the end of the job. My first job fired from when I was 15. I had 2 more jobs after that. Selling clothes for friends of my mom. And there as well, just stealing like a kleptomaniac. Always wanting to steal, always wanting other people's stuff. But in the interim as well, breaking into houses, stealing cars, stealing motorbikes. And just hanging out with the wrong guys, doing drugs. And I was arrested for attempted car theft. I got 7 cuts with a light cane from the police when I was 16 years old. And, you know, at that time, I remember my bum bled from the police cuts. But it wasn't painful to me because I'd been used to so much punishment before. But when they spoke to me kindly, these policemen, I remember the first one gave me 4 cuts. The second one gave me 3. So the first one could rest his arm. They wanted a fresh arm for the second 3. And it wasn't like normal school cuts where they bring it back here and they swipe you. And I remember not crying for those cuts. But I remember afterwards when they were concerned about me and about my future and they were speaking to me nicely, that is what really made me cry, you know. With these, I think that was the only good intimate moment I've had with police ever. And thereafter I got involved in car theft as well. I was arrested, and instead of going to jail, they said I can go to the army. And so I went to the army at just turned 17. I went to the army for 2 years, was on the border, and there was a structure that I really liked. I liked the discipline. I liked having people, you know, have a routine for me. I think it was really good for me. After I left the army, after 2 years, I had a good, clean, more or less a clean service record, although I used to do drugs. I remember going to the Methodist church while I was in the army, in Afrikaans, the Vryerkerk, and it was the best church to go to because it was the church that was closest to the place where we used to buy drugs. So we'd use that just as a channel on a Sunday to go buy drugs. And after I finished the army, I got involved with some bad friends. We used to break in a lot. I started doing mandrakes, drugs, and I started housebreaking a lot, robbing, stealing a lot of guns. I used to steal and sell guns to guys, and I got involved with some bad guys. There was a group of guys that I was selling stolen goods to, and they didn't give me the money that I needed for the stolen goods.
So I took a gas bottle and blew up half the house. And that was just the kind of person that I was. I wasn't worried about anybody's life. I just had this hatred in me, and I wanted to just get people, you know, that tried to do me in. And that was around 1990, 1991. And then in 91, I got arrested for housebreaking, and I was sent to Paulsmoor. And the condition, I was in Paulsmoor for a little while, and they said, no, well, the condition is that you go to rehab, a government rehabilitation center, and while you are there, you do the full 16-week program. If you don't and you do anything wrong, you'll get a sentence that we are giving you a suspended sentence. You'll get the sentence. And I was in that rehab, a government rehab, for a month. And a friend and myself, we broke out and at night, and we walked about 7 km to the next city, and just outside of Pretoria, and we broke into a shop. And the next morning, we were arrested, and I went to jail. That was my first jail sentence, and I was in jail for 7 months. And also just fighting in jail and just full of hatred. I remember even guys that had been in jail for many years, they would look at me and some of them would say to me, Declan, you need to be nice. And I just had this hatred in me and always wanting to hurt people, always wanting to fight and throw punches and stuff like that. And after seven months, I left the prison and I finished the program, the drug program. And I went home, and a few months later, I got involved with old friends again. And I'm back into drugs, back into mandrax, back into breaking into houses, fighting, stealing. And I got arrested in 1994, right in the beginning of January, for a robbery with some aggravating circumstances. There was a lot of violence, and people were hurt. And I was arrested for that and for housebreaking. And I ended up with a 9.5-year sentence I was 22, I just turned 23. And I was sentenced to 9.5 years. And I ended up being in prison for 4.5 years. And the first time I was in prison, it was the old South Africa. And when you got into trouble with someone else, another inmate in the prison, you could fight it out. And you beat each other up, and afterwards your friends, you shake hands. But now this was a new South Africa in 94, and so we were mixed, every color together. And it was a different system, and it was gangsterism, the numbers gang. And so it was a whole new setup for me, and I was quite frightened of this. But also to overcome this, I wanted to join one of the gangs. And in prison, to join a gang, they don't come up to you. You need to go out of your own and say, I want this. There's a certain thing you say. So I went up to them, and I said, I want work. I'm looking for work. And they asked me what type of work, and I told them. And so I joined a certain gang, and there's different things you can do in the gang, different ways to operate in the gang. And one of the ways that I wanted to operate was just a way of violence, of protecting the gang, and sort of being like a protector of the gang with blood and with a knife. And they tested me and said, and I just really wanted to belong. I wanted to belong to something, and I wanted to be acknowledged, and I wanted X to say, hey, Declan, you know, you're cool, and just accept it. And they said to me, here's the knife, that guy over there, you must go take him out. He's been talking to the warders behind our back. And I said, that guy, I said, I don't like him anyway, give me that knife. And I wanted to go and stab him, and just callous and hard. And they stopped me. They said, no, we can see you. They didn't use the word zealous, but you can see you aim to do that. And so I ended up joining this gang and being a part of them. I was in Portland for 2 years, and I got a transfer up to a central prison. And up there, I studied a bit. I did my N2 and my N3. And I remember there were some guys in the cell, in the one big cell that I was in. We were about 18 to 20 guys in the cell, and they would read their Bible at night, and they would get together in the bathroom and put a blanket down, and they would worship. And sometimes my friends and myself that did drugs, we would go and we would sit with them and just listen to them pray and watch them read the Bible and listen to their stories. And one morning at about 2 a.m, I was smoking this long joint in my bed. And all of a sudden, I just had this desire just left me to smoke this weed. And I took everything that I had and I went to give it to another guy. And for a year in that, just something that I look back on, for a year in that prison, I didn't do any weed. And it was just from reading my Bible a little bit and hanging out with these guys. There was something about them and something that
caught on to me. And yeah, so in Central, I was in Central Prison for 2.5 years. I ended up doing 4.5 out of the 9.5 years, which was quite good for me. And could have been a bit longer. I had a few. I was in solitary confinement a couple of times. I had a couple of offences inside, but I did also study, so they gave me some time off. I left prison, and I was on parole for 2.5 years in Pretoria, and I came down to Cape Town in 2001, and I got involved with some old friends once again. And now it was worse drugs. It was crack cocaine, and I was introduced to this. In fact, I saw them smoking it, and it looked good, and I wanted to try it. And the moment I've got an addictive nature, so the moment I tried this, I was hooked on it. And I just enjoyed from then on, from 2001 to 2002. I was on crack cocaine. I met my daughter's mom in 2002. And I was just so broken. And it was such a broken, horrible relationship. I just hated myself. I hated myself so much for what I'd become. And I couldn't get off these drugs. And I wanted to be a better person. And, you know, I used to see people on a Saturday morning doing shopping, and doing things with their families. And I couldn't do these things, man, because I was hooked on these drugs. My daughter was born the following year, in 2003. So from 2003 up until 2006, I just went through such a bad time because I couldn't provide for her, and I couldn't buy her things. And I ended up staying in this drug house in Brooklyn. And my daughter would actually be allowed to come and sleep over some nights. She was 3 years old then, in 2006. And she'd wake up in the morning and say, "Dad, can we get something?" She would say, "Dad, can you buy me a sweetie? Or can you get me ice cream?" And I couldn't. I didn't have the money. I spent all my money on drugs, and I couldn't get out of this crack cocaine rocks, and it was just killing me. And a few times I should have died. And then finally in 2006 October, another drug addict friend of mine, he said to me, "Declan, I know of this place called Victory Outreach. It's an American ministry. They've come to South Africa." They came to South Africa the same year. And it was the morning after I'd done so much drugs that I had to take sleeping pills just to get normal. And my daughter's mom came to where I was staying. She knew I didn't go to work that day. And she saw that I was like a zombie. I was absolutely dead inside. And I just said to her, "I need help." And we ended up going to, she first took me to a social worker. And then I ended up going to this place that this ex-drug addict friend of mine recommended to us, and I went there. And there's an American ministry that reaches out to drug addicts all over the world. They've been going since 1967. And when I got there, there was this big Hispanic, this Mexican guy with a bandana and tattoos all over, and he'd been shot through his heart and several times in his chest. He'd been shot, and he didn't die. He was one of those miracle oaks. And He belonged to the Mexican mafia in the Californian prisons. And to be in that gang, you have to kill someone to be in the gang. And he had killed people. And he was a murderer. But Jesus saved him. And it was his desire to come to Cape Town and to open a men's home here in Cape Town. One in Milnerton and one in Kells River. And I went to the one in Milnerton. But when I got there, the guy said to me, "Sorry, there's no space here for you." And I burst out crying. I was 35 years old, and it's just, man, I just wanted to help so badly. I needed to just get away from these drugs. And he said to me, "There's another home in Kells River, and if you're there the next day, if you can get there the next day before 5 o'clock, then you're in." I was like, "Oh, thank you." And this man prayed for me, and he laid hands on me. And I remember this guy, I got to know him later on for a year that I was in the home. I remember this guy praying for me boldly and just with so much confidence. And when he finished praying for me, I just felt this peace. I just felt this peace come over me, and I just somehow knew that everything was going to be okay. I just felt this. It was like I was being refreshed and being renewed, and I went to sleep at my mom's place that day, that night. And the next morning, I was taken to this home in Kales River. And when I got there, there were some guys. They're all ex-drug addicts and gangsters. And there were some of them who were doing chores outside. And as I got there, I just heard, "Declan, my bro." And there's a guy that was with me in prison a couple of times. And I thought, oh, no, this is the wrong place. As I looked at this guy, Bradley, he had been in there 3 months already. And I knew what kind of a person he was. So I looked at that place and I thought, this place can't be for real, man, because I know you. And he was just as bad as me. I mean, he was a druggie. We used to break in together, ride in stolen cars together, do bad things together. And something said to me, now I need to be in this home. And then when I got into the home, I saw how this man, there was such a hectic drug addict and was such a criminal and a gangster in prison as well with me. I saw how God had done something in his life. We ended up, after a while, going to Paul's Mall to pray for prisoners there. And I remember him praying for many prisoners in the courtyard, and they were just falling over. They were being slain in the spirit. And it was a new thing for him because he had been saved not even a year. The program was a year. And so we would do these outreaches, and these people were just falling over in the courtyard. And he would say to me, "Yo, Declan, look at this, my brother, watch here." And he had this gift, and he was so excited about it. And so we had some. So I was in that home for a year, but for the first 3 days in that home, you don't have to be part of the structure. So you just come off drugs, and you can relax, and you're coming off the drugs now, so you can eat, drink, go to the toilet. You don't have to be part of the cleaning up, and the chores. And the Bible studies and the prayer groups and stuff like that. And so for the first 3 days, I started to read my Bible. And somebody said to me, "Start in Matthew." So I started in the book of Matthew. And I remember that when I was in prison and I was in solitary confinement several times, I used to take the pages of the Bible and tear it out and smoke weed with the pages. And so now I'm reading this book. And as I'm reading it, there's like this hole that's been inside me my whole life that I've wanted to fill. And these words just start to fill me. And I'm like, "Jeez, what is this? This is better than drugs, man." Sure. And as I'm reading this word, it's just like really, really penetrating my soul. And it's starting to make me alive. And I'm starting to, there's other guys in the room with me, and I'm saying, "Jeez, are you reading this, bro?" And they're like, "Whoa, this is good stuff, man." And there was such a presence of God in that place. You know, it says in the Bible that we were dead to sin. I mean, we were dead in our sin, and we were dead to Christ. We didn't know Christ. But in that place, as I began to read the Bible, I didn't understand it, but I was becoming alive inside, and Jesus was becoming real to me. He was showing himself, and he was showing me that he is what I need. That he's my portion. And then Jeremiah chapter 15, verse 16, it says, "Lord, when your word was found, I ate it, and it became to me a joy and the delight of my heart." And that really became my portion. And once I tasted that, I knew that I had this dislike for drugs. All of a sudden, I had this dislike for crime. I didn't want to do drugs anymore. I didn't want to smoke cigarettes anymore. I didn't want to do anything bad anymore. This word was just ministering to me and teaching me and changing me. And then I became involved in the home and in the structure. And as I humbled myself in that place, God raised me up to be an overseer and to be a leader. I started a satellite church. And just while God started to use me and, you know, evangelizing as well, we used to go onto trains, and trains that would be full of people from Maitland to Belleville and on a Friday afternoon. And the train would be full. Hundreds of people in one coach, guys standing, holding up like that. And we would pray before we went. And I wasn't saved even a year. And we would shout out in that train, "Hallelujah. we greet you in the name of Jesus, but shout it out loud, and that whole train would be silent. At the name of Jesus, everybody would keep quiet, and we'd preach the gospel, and we'd try to give an altar call before the next station. So we'd try and speed it up and tell them, hey, I was a drug addict, and Jesus set me free, my life has changed, and we know some of you are going home today, and you've got families and friends that are on drugs or husbands that are alcoholics. And so we preached the gospel to them and told them about Jesus. And then we asked them to put their hands up if there's anyone in the crowd here that would like to receive Jesus into their heart. And many times a lot of people, a lot of broken women and men, they would put their hands up and we'd lead them in prayer right there on the train and save them. So it was just an amazing time of getting to know the Lord and seeing the Lord just work in my life, you know. And at the end of my year there, 2007 October, I left the home and they moved to Mitchell's Plain and I left the church and I had an opportunity to come this side to Tableview to look after someone's house, friends of my mom. And so I broke away from the church and after experiencing so many good things in the Lord, I went back onto drugs. And a friend of my sister, Cheryl Reich, who's in the church, she said to my sister, I hear about your brother. Tell him to come to Josh Jen. And I came here in 2008. And it was just totally different from the church where I was at. A totally different church. Because in the church where I was at, everybody was wearing suits and ties and pointy shoes. Because they were all ex-drug addicts and they needed that discipline and structure. So when I came here, I saw the guys preaching in flip-flops. I was like, jeez, what's going on in this place? You know? So I thought, are these guys for real or what? Because we're used to the discipline and we're on fire for God, but this is very relaxed. And somebody prayed for me. I went to a community group, to Dane Ledbetter's community. And I remember my hair was short, and I wasn't sure about the setup here. You know, are these guys for real or what? And I remember at the time my hair was very short. And he started praying for me at his community group, my first community group. And he said, Declan, I see a picture. Of, sure. Hallelujah. Sure, I need some more of that, man. But he says, I see a picture of you jumping into the pool and coming out on the other side and flicking your hair back. And I looked at this, and when I was 15, I used to do that. And my friends and family used to rip me off because they used to call me Casey. I always used to flick my hair back like that. And so from that point, and you know, these people, they're for real. You know, that they're hearing God. And but while I was in the church, for the next 5 years, I struggled with crack. I used to, pawn my motorbike. I had a little motorbike. I used to pawn the bike for crack. And I would always be okay for maybe 2 or 3 days, maybe even a week. And then I would fall again. But I would fall badly and spend all my money. And even being in Brooklyn, at a crack house there, I would pawn my motorbike. And people would sometimes have to come and get me. Reynolds Conkin was one of the guys that came to pick me up there one day. And a few guys from the church, one guy came with his 357 Magnum to the crack house to come and get me. One of the brothers in the church, I won't mention his name. But he was quite upset that I was in this place. Because he saw what God was doing in my life. But he saw how I was falling all the time. And I couldn't help myself. I knew I had to always be accountable, and when I did fall, I had to tell my leaders and my elders, man, I messed up again, over and over again, and it became embarrassing after a while. I remember being in front here one day, and one of the guys came up to me, and there was an altar call for people that were struggling with addiction. I went up, and the guy said to me, "Cheers, Dex, are you still struggling?" I said, "Yes, I am, man." One of the guys, when I first came to the church, because I was slipping up so many times, he said to me, "Declan, we don't have the capacity in this church to help you." But I received a good foundation. I knew Jesus could help me. And but the church did help me. And I came to know in those 5 years, when I was in the home, I learned certain things about the Lord. But when I came to this church for the 5 years that I was struggling, where sometimes they should have said to me, "Declan, you need to leave this church because you're becoming a bad apple for the rest." It says in the Bible that a bit of bad yeast spoils the whole batch. And so there were times when I should maybe have left, but God had a plan, and
I think the elders, they saw something in me of Jesus, and that I was really desperate and wanting to come right, man, wanting to have a normal life. But I mean, for 5 years up and down, it was such a struggle. But I saw in the community, and my community leaders were Johan and Lee. Johan and Lise van Sale. And I just saw their love, you know. And I began to see God's love. The love that I really wanted, you know. In and through people and in and through them. The many times that I slipped up, they still always welcomed me into the home and loved me and spoke over my life and said, "Dex, we see victory for you." And they never judged me. They would put me on my place sometimes. But they would never look down on me, you know. And that really, well, they kept me in the church. And I remember after 5 years of thinking to myself, man, when is this next attack going to come? When's this next pull going to come? Because, I mean, I've been tired of it over and over again. I've been doing drugs from 10 years old. But this, the crack, the rocks, was just so hectic for me. And I'm thinking to myself, when is the next pull going to come? Because I know I'm not going to be able to resist it. And as I was in my mother's garage and I was having a cigarette. And as I thought, I felt that battle after all these years just taken out of me. Whew, gone. That was in 2013, August. Everything that I'd been, anyway, that was 2013, August, and that addiction, that those desires was taken from me in an instant. The Lord took it away. Boom. Amen. And I was reading, just shortly after that, I was reading 1 Samuel. The book of 1 Samuel, and I was reading about Hannah. And normally when, at that time, when I would come across a story about a woman, I would like, no, this is not for me. That's probably for a woman. But I like to read about David and his mighty men and those warriors. But I'm reading about Hannah, and I'm reading how she for year after year, she would go to and pray to God. She would go to the temple and ask God for a child, and she just couldn't get a breakthrough. And she couldn't get a child. And she struggled for years. And it got to a point where it looked like she was drunk at the altar. And the priest said to her, "Woman, when are you going to stop coming here drunk?" And she said, "No, I'm not drunk. I'm pouring out my soul." And in a prayer of thanksgiving in 1 Samuel chapter 2, I was reading through that. And I think in verse 9 it says, it's not by strength that one prevails. Or it's not, in another version, it's not by might that one prevails. And I realized I needed to know that it wasn't my strength. It was not the men's home. It wasn't all the Bible reading or fasting and men's groups and preaching and evangelizing and all these things that are very good for your growth as a Christian and as a child of God. But I had to know that it wasn't any of those things that were going to save me. I couldn't look back one day and say, you know what, the church. It was because I go to church that I'm saved. Or it was because I'm reading the Bible or I'm praying that I'm saved. I had to know that it's Jesus himself that came to save me. It was Jesus himself that helped me. And then after that, I was still smoking for a while, cigarettes. But I knew, it came to a time when I knew I had to lay these cigarettes down. The drugs and that addiction the Lord took from me in an instant. But the cigarettes, I knew this is something I have to suffer through. And I think I suffered for about 6 months. But when I stopped, on the day that I stopped smoking, a few days later, the Lord raised me up to be a community leader in his church. And in a short while, well, a few months after that, also to be a deacon in the church. And I saw, if I look back at everything that I've been through, I'm very grateful. Even for all the pain that I went through, as the Lord is using all that now, you know, for what he wants to do in and through my life. And I've just seen also how I work for myself. So I do handiwork and I do plumbing, electrical, that type of thing. And I've just seen how the Lord has used me now
after taking me through that, to pray for people. I've prayed for many people that have been healed in the workplace and gone on outreaches where I've prayed for people and baptized people and just seeing people get healed, you know. And also just having a heart and just the compassion for people that are lost and broken and hurting. And so it's been amazing to see. I just wanted to share it this time. Okay, we can finish now. Okay. Just want to finish with one verse quickly. And it's Genesis 50:20. Genesis chapter 50 verse 20. And it says in that verse, you intended to harm me, but God intended it for the good. For what is now being accomplished, the saving of many lives. And it's the story of Joseph when he was sold into Egypt and sold into slavery, rejected from his brothers, and ended up in prison for doing good, where I was in prison for doing bad. But he was ended up being put second in charge of Egypt. And he had the authority and he had the means to provide food for people in the nations where there was a famine and where they were hungry. And thousands of years later in the New Testament and now, the Lord will use us as his children, you know, to be able to provide a spiritual food, to tell people about the gospel. People that also have a famine, a spiritual famine, that don't have Jesus, they don't have the Lord in their lives, that have a whole year that they need filled. And so we have that as children of God to be able to give them the spiritual food. You intended to harm me if I look back at my life from when I was a little boy. I can say that to the devil. You intended to harm me, but God turned it around and he intended it for the good, for what is now being accomplished, the saving of many lives, ministering to people and praying for people and sharing the good news of Jesus Christ with people. I'd just like to end on that note. Thank you.